Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chagiga Daf Chof. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Chof. On the side of the Gemara, you will notice we have a Nosei Klali, a general topic heading, and we indicate Ad Sof HaPerek. This topic will keep us till the end of the Perek, which you can see is on Amud Beis, right before in the middle of the page, before the mission of the third Perek. What we've written in our note reads, Shmira V'Hesech HaDas B'Tahara. The concept of guarding oneself from agents that can render ritual impurity. Hesech HaDas is the opposite situation, opposite from the case of Shmira, namely where you are watching and concentrating. Hesech HaDas is the removal of that concentration, the losing of attention, of concentration on this matter. So we have Shmira and Hesech HaDas with regard to Tahara, issues of ritual purity. In the Gemara text with which we will be opening, we'll notice a series of triangles. And under the Mivneh, the structural note, we indicate that these triangles are Shloisha Mikrim, three cases, Shel Hesech HaDas B'Shmira L'Tahara, three cases where a person loses his concentration or experiences unawareness concerning matters of Tahara. We've mentioned already in our previous shurim that we're dealing with areas of ritual impurity on a rabbinic level. And we continue now with the Gemara text, Amar Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, Nofla Ma'aforosoi Heimenu. Ma'aforoso is an article of clothing, a sudor, a turban, but for our purposes it represents an article of clothing fell off of an individual, Omar Lechavero, and he says to his friend, Tuno li, give it to me, pick it up for me, give it to me, Vinosna lo, and the person picks it up and gives it to him, Tumea, it is declared as ritually impure. Rashi, Tumea, Rashi we're looking at is in the upper part of the narrow lines, Tumea vafilu zetor, even if the owner of it is a person that is ritually pure. Well, the common first taima later in the Gemara, this we'll see at the bottom line of this omid, later the explanation will be given, Chazoka ein odem mishamir masha biyad chavero. There is a given, a status that we understand to be a reality that people do not watch, they don't supervise that which is in the hands of someone else. Lefika hulo shomra biyad chavero. After it fell off of him, and he asked someone else to pick it up while it was in that other party's hand, so the owner wasn't concentrating, wasn't watching over it. Vegam zeshin ostalo, and likewise the person that picked it up and gave it to the owner, lohoya chosh l'shomra, he also wasn't concerned with guarding it in a state of ritual purity. Demeimar omar, he figured kivon shomar le tenoli, since the owner said, give it to me, the owner, eino yodea im tome ani im tor. The owner spoke to me, he doesn't know my status, and nevertheless, it didn't bother him to ask of me to pick it up for him. Lo chosh l'taros, the fellow picking it up, also wasn't concerned, if the owner isn't concerned, by virtue of the fact that he's asking me, and an unknown to him, so I'm not going to be concerned either. V'yesh kan hesech hadas. And here you have an example of this break in guarding, break in concentration, break in focus. Ulamachmirin b'taros, and for those who are diligent, who are Machmirin are people that accept upon themselves greater stringency than the letter of the law expects. Have hesech hadas tuma. Hesech hadas, where there's a break in concentration, a break in the guarding, that is the equivalent of actual ritual impurity. We continue in the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram, nischalfa loy kelim shel shabbos. Kelim, literally, are vessels. In this context, it's a reference to clothing. Nischalfa loy kelim shel shabbos bekelim shel choyl. The lovshan nitme'u. Here's a person that intended to remove from his closet, has a clothing closet, and on the rack he has Shabbos clothing and he has weekday clothing. There's a certain given in this Gemara that people will guard their Shabbos clothing with more intensity than their weekday clothing, guard it from sources that could render it impure. So a person had a switch around took place where he thought he was taking his weekday clothing, and with a weekday mindset, so your guard is lowered somewhat. And it turned out that which he took were Shabbos clothing. He put them on, and lo and behold, he sees that he's wearing his Shabbos suit. A situation like that could very well take place in the dark. A person took off the rack clothing. He thought he was reaching for his weekday clothing, and it ended up it was his Shabbos clothing. Got dressed in the dark, walked outside, and was, oh wow, I'm wearing something other than that which I intended. Now that is an example of hesech hadas. He was thinking that it was weekday, which requires on his part a lower level of stringency or of scrupulousness, and it turned out that what he's wearing is actually something that demands on his part a higher level of attention, of care. So that's why the result of this case is nitmu, it becomes tomei. Now the Rashi uses a term that's going to be very important later in the Gemara, and it has to do with a person having kavona lishmor ledovar zev and nimsa acher. He's thinking that it's one thing and it turns out to be something else. That is considered eino shamor. So you can see if you glance across in the Rashi. There's a dashed underlined phrase, "V'nimsa shudover acher eino shomer." That's going to be a very important expression for the Gemara later on. So Rav Yonasan ben Amram is of that opinion, where you are thinking, where you're intending it, the item that you're going to come into contact with as item A, and it turns out to be item B. That would be sufficient grounds for imposing Tuma. Once again, I know we might sound repetitious to many of you, but we're talking about a rabbinic realm. We're not talking about actual contact with a defiling body like a dead animal or a dead sheretz, but we're dealing with a rabbinic realm which imposes impurity even when there's a situation of lack of intent or lack of concentration. Continuing in the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Elazar bar Tzadok, Maisa b'shtei nashim chaveros, an incident took place involving two women that were themselves chaveros. Chaveros means they are people that are diligent with regard to matters of ritual impurity. Shenis chafalem kleim beveis amerchatz. They were in a bathhouse and their clothing got switched around. Mrs. A clothed herself with Mrs. B's clothing, and Mrs. B clothed herself with Mrs. A's clothing. Uvo maisi lefnei Rabbi Akiva v'tim on. The case came to Rabbi Akiva's attention, and he declared them to be tomei. We now start a long question. Notice the long question mark. This is a very long question. There's a lot of sub-discussion that takes place, but after all is said and done, this entire section of Gemara is designed to lead up to a question. Actually, two questions. Maskif lo Rebbe Oshaya. Elo me'ata. Rabbi Shaya asks, according to what we have learned till now, and I'm choosing a route here of emphasis on Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram, specifically what he said, and Rashi's commentary on that is what leads me to present the Gemara as I intend to do, Mirtz Hashem. Based on the concept that if you were thinking it's one thing and it turns out to be something else, with that in mind, and as Rav Yonasan ben Amram explicitly said, that's grounds for imposing Tumah. Hoishit yadoi lasal lito paschit. A person reaches into a basket to take wheat bread. If it also be other pasorim, and lo and behold, it turns out to be a loaf of barley bread. Hachinami denitmes. Are you going to say because the item turned out to be something other than he thought, that's grounds for declaring it as tomei? V'chitema hachinami. And if you say that's right, v'hatanya. But we have a source that says hamishamer es hachovis becheskas shel yayin. If someone is supervising, is watching a barrel of liquid, thinking that it's wine, the nimtzeis shel shemen, and it turns out to be a barrel full of oil. Tahoira milatame, it is considered ritually pure to the extent that it will not communicate tuma to something else. It will not communicate tuma to another item. So what do we see from this? We see a problem for the position that Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram represented. Here, intention for as one thing turns out to be something else. And it says here, we dashed underline the main phrase, Tahoru l'mitame, it experiences a status of Tara. Rav Yonasan ben Amram, for example, said that when there's a switch around, it is reason for imposing Tumah. Notice a bracketed section. If we skip the bracketed section, use your bracket length indicator, and you see right after the bracketed section, it says, Mikol Mokom Kashya, the question that we have raised now remains a question. That's still a problem. How do you justify the position of Rav Yonasan ben Amram when you have a Tanaic source that says that when you're guarding it as one thing and it turns out to be something else, it remains tar? So that's a problem. And then you can see the oid moisiv rabo barav. Well, you see the Gemara right after the brackets, where if you continue reading, it says, and furthermore, rabo barav raises a question. And you're going to see later in the Gemara that this question is focused on Rabbi Yonasan ben Elazar, the first of the triangles. How do I know that? Because if you skip to the end of this Tanaic source, if you go to the Gemara after the Tanaic source, you can see the Gemara there says, and we underline the names, that says they're Bishlamo, the Rebbe Elazar Bar Tzadok, and the next line, Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram. Things work out for them from the second source. Is not there, it doesn't represent a problem for them. However, the second line from the bottom, you can see we dashed underline Elo, the Rebbe Yonasan ben Elazar. According to him, this source presents a problem. So what we have done by way of structure, we're showing, first of all, that we have a long question marking. When you get to the point that follows the brackets, you see we have a question certainly on the position that Rav Yonasan ben Amram represented. That was the second triangle, where he presented a thesis that if you are thinking it's one thing and it turns out to be something else, it's not considered sufficient Shmira, considered sufficient supervision, and that is grounds for declaring it ritually unclean, consider it Tomei. So we have a question on that position, and then the Rabo Bar Avua presents a question that challenges Rav Yonasan ben Elazar, the first triangle's opinion. Well, with all that having been said, with the hope of creating structural clarity, we glance now at the bracketed section, and we also have a note, by the way, that on the side, and the starred note says you can see we have a circled star. It says Achrei HaSograim, after the brackets, Nishar Kushyazu. This question remains, namely, the switch around is equals Tahara. Switch around is not grounds for Tuma, and Rabbi Yonasan Amram said that switch around is grounds for Tuma. So that question remains till after the brackets. B'soichon, within the brackets, Yesh Nisayon L'sayeya L'hadiliel, there is an attempt in the brackets to support that which was said earlier, specifically that which Rabbi Yonasan Amram represented, Yesh Tuma, that there is Tuma when a switch around takes place. Avonisayon ze nidche. This attempt, though, will be rejected. And all of this is within the brackets. So since the attempt to support the Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram position, the attempt to support is rejected, the question remains. So now let's continue with the bracketed section. Ule ta'ameich, according to you that wanted to ask on the position of Tuma taken by Rav Yonasan ben Amram, and to demonstrate from the Tanaic source that when switch around takes place, Tahara remains. Amos Seifa will state the Seifa of that very source. It says, Ve'asur alechol. Am I? It says you can't eat the, in that case, the oil. You thought it was wine. It turned out to be oil. You can't consume the oil. Does that not show that it in fact is tamei? And that would be a siyua. That would be a support for Rav Yonasan ben Amram. Omer Rav Yirmiya. Rav Yirmiya says it's not a support. It doesn't. The fact that it's osur milechol is not conclusive evidence that there is tuma. Beomer, the owner in this case, says shmartiha midavar hametamo. I was guarding it from things that could impose tuma. V'lo midavar haposla, but I wasn't guarding it from from those lower levels of impurity that could render it itself as being unfit. We alluded to this earlier. There are many different levels in the realm of Tuma and Tara. We alluded to this in our previous year, where there is a situation where something becomes Tome, and it has the power to pass Tuma on to something else. That's called Metamo. There's another situation where an item comes into contact with something that renders the item, the second item, unfit, but that item is incapable of passing the Tuma onwards. That's, in this case, he was on guard from those heavier elements, those items that could impose Tuma. Therefore, the source says, Tahora Milatame, but he wasn't on guard regarding something that could render it unfit. So, as far as we're concerned, where that which he guarded was an effective guarding. And we must now emphasize, it was an effective guarding, even though it turned out to be another item, a different item. That is the main, that needs to be emphasized. So once again, we have a Reisha, we have a Seifa, but what we see in this story is that the guarding efforts that he put in were effective, even though it turned out to be something other than that which he originally thought it was. Well, that is a challenge. The challenge then remains to Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram, who claimed that when there is a switch around, there is full tumah that's imposed. Here we have a type of switch around, and we don't impose a full level of tumah. Now the Gemara asks, this is a detailed question. For our purposes, we have to emphasize, though, that the main question remains, namely that switch around does not result in automatic tumah. In order to give this answer, we have to say there's a split type of supervision, that you can supervise it from high-level forms of tumah, and at the same time, that doesn't mean that you're watching it from other forms of ruination. The Gemara asks, "Umi ikon netirusa lapalga? Is there such a thing as partial guarding?" We said that the fellow declares that he guarded it from Dovar Matama. He wasn't guarding it from Dovar Apostle. Is this a reality that there's split guarding? The Gemara says, "In Vahatanya, yes, it exists, and we have a source to prove that." Hoishit yado basal. A person extended his hand into a basket full of figs. Vasal al ksefo, and the basket is on his shoulders. So he reached into the basket on his shoulders. Vahamagrefa baso hasal. Magrefa is a vessel, a utensil that's used for separating figs that are stuck to one another. They sometimes find often in the Gemara cakes of figs, fig cakes. It's not a cake that's baked, but it's simply lots of figs that are pressed together, and a utensil is needed to separate them. That utensil is called a magrefa. And so we have a basket on someone's shoulder full of figs, and a magrefa in the basket as well. V'hoya belibo al asal, v'hoya belibo al hamagrefa. And the person was concentrating on the basket. My impression is the basket of figs. He was concentrating on the figs, concentrating on them, guarding them from tumah sources. But he wasn't thinking about the magrefa. Hasal tor v'magrefa tamea. The basket is the basket itself is tohar, and the basket is a reference to, we have to just be more accurate than what we said before, the basket is really a reference to the physical basket itself, the basket that contained the figs. His mind was on the basket to guard it from something that would metame it, but his mind was not on the magrefa. The result of this is that the sal is tohor, the basket remains tohor because he was guarding it. The magrefa that his mind was not on, that is considered tamea. So you see right away, you see a concept of split guarding. Hasal tohor, we said in this source that the sal is tohor. Why does the sal remain tohor? Tetame hamagrefa lasal. You said that the magrefa becomes tome, so why does it not make the basket that contains the magrefa make the basket also tome? Answer, ein kli metame kli. And as far as the rules of tumah are concerned, vessels do not impart tumah to another vessel. There isn't tumah transfer from vessel to vessel. Question, v'litame mashe besal, let the magrefa render tome the figs in the basket. Omar Ravina, and here is really the main point. I mistakenly tried to emphasize this point a few lines up, a bit prematurely, but here is the main point. Ravina says, if you want to know why the contents of the basket remain tor, even though the magrefa is tome, but Oimer, he says, Shmartio midover shemetamoi velo midover aposlo. When I was watching, well, I said that I wasn't watching it. Well, I was guarding the magrefa from those kind of things that would impose tumah on it. But I wasn't guarding it from those things that could render the magrefa itself tome, or itself pusel. So that's why the magrefa won't impose tumah to something else, because I was guarding it from that. I was making sure that it wouldn't come into contact with something that could impose tumah strength to the magrefa. But I wasn't guarding it from something that would render the magrefa itself unfit. Mikol mokoim kashya. And as we indicated earlier, the original question remains, namely, Rabbi Yonasan ben Amram, and as we saw Rashi explain, claimed that if there's a switch around, that is grounds for imposing Tumah. We challenge that, Rav Hoshaya challenges that, by demonstrating that even though switch around takes place, Tahara remains. So that's one question. V'oid moisiv rabo baravua. A challenge is presented, eventually we'll see, to Rav Yonasan ben Elazar, the first triangle, from the following source. In this source, we see some new markings. You see under the Mivneh heading, diamonds appear. These are Shnei Maisim Shel Noshim Shebol Lefnei Rabbi Shmuel, two stories involving women coming to Rabbi Shmuel, Be'inyan Shmira Latara, regarding this very issue of guarding things for the purpose of maintaining purity. The two stories are very, very similar to one another in terms of their halachic content. Maisa Beisha Achas, we're reading in the Tanaic source where the first diamond appears. Maisa Beisha Achas, in a story involving a woman, Shabos Lefnei Rabbi Shmuel, she came to Rabbi Yishmael, Viomrlo, Rabbi Beget Zeh, Oraktiv Betara. She says, this article of clothing I wove in a state of Tahara. Rashi points out, Oraktiv Betara, Rashi right across from here says, Yodasani, I know, Shemisha Shineragbo, Sholosh Al Sholosh its voice, She Nire Letuma, when the sheet of fabric was woven to a minimal amount of 3 by 3 fingers in size. That's the minimum size for fabric to be susceptible to absorbing tumah. From that point that it reached 3 by 3 etzbois, lo noga boi tumah. I know that no tumah touched it. Mikom okom, lo hoya belibi l'shomro. Nevertheless, she tells us that when I was weaving it, I wasn't concentrating on guarding it. So she says, I wove this garment, and to the best of my knowledge, it did not come into contact with any defiling sources. And we continue in this source, the Lohoya Belibi Lishomro Batar, but I wasn't concentrating on guarding it. When we talk Bedikos Shehoya Rabbi Yishmael Bodka, and through questions that Rabbi Yishmael investigated her with, Rashi points out, since you weren't concentrating on guarding it, maybe something happened. And he asked her questions. So through the questions that he presented to her, Omra Lo, she says, she reveals the following. Rabbi, Nida Moshcha Imi Bechevel, a woman who was Tamea. Nida is a woman who experiences her female monthly cycle, and as such she becomes ritually impure. A Nida drew a cord, a rope with me. The weaving process in this case involves a rope being attached to the loom, and it's possible that she caused movement of the fabric. Omar Rabbi Shmuel, Kama Gedolim Divrei Chachamim Shoyomrim. How wonderful! How great are the words of the sages that proclaimed, Belibo Lishomro Tor, Ein Belibo Lishomro Tomei. Only if one's mind is concentrated on guarding it can we declare something to be tohar. If someone's not concentrating on it, so then it's declared tomei. And here you have an illustration from a real life example of that principle. She wasn't concentrating on it. So even though she thought superficially that there was no tumah, but she then realized through the questions that he asked that there was a source of tumah for the fabric, namely the nida that might have moved the loom on which the fabric was attached. Shuv Maisa Beisha Achas Shebos Lefnei Rabbi Shmuel. Another incident with a woman coming to Rabbi Shmuel. And we have to add that this woman had not immersed herself in a mikveh for her tumah, for her need, for her having been a nida. So it's a woman like that. She comes to Rabbi Shmuel, Omrlo, Rabbi, ma pazu aragtio batara. This cloth I wove in tahara. Velo hoyo belibi l'shomro batara. But I wasn't concentrating on guarding it. When we talk b'dikos shoya Rabbi Yishmael Botkon through questions that Rabbi Shmuel was asking Omrlo, she revealed him the following. Rebbe, nimo nifsika li, v'kashartia b'peh. A strand, nimo is a strand of the fabric. A strand broke, she was weaving this mapa, and a strand broke before it reached the minimum shi'ur, the minimum size for tumah susceptibility. So before it had reached that size, a string, a thread broke, and I tied it together using my mouth, getting saliva on the string, maybe making it easier to tie together. And one has to think that the saliva remained damp. Now, the saliva of a person that's tamei, as we have over here, the saliva is a source of tumah. And at that point, we mentioned before, maybe we mentioned it prematurely, but when this happened, she had not yet been tevula lenidasa. And what we have to consider is that the saliva remained damp after the weaving continued and the fabric reached the minimum size for becoming tamei. So the woman, as far as she is concerned, that when she was when the fabric had advanced, she was metayer herself. She did immerse herself in a mikveh and become tohor. However, at the point in the story when the strand broke, she was tamei. However, she said that the fabric was tohor. Well, that's because at that point the fabric had not reached its minimum size. However, as the weaving process continued, she might have been metayer herself. However, the saliva might remain damp, might still be present. And that saliva coming from a woman who at that point was tmeya would render the fabric that it's resting on to become tame. So she claimed that after the weaving had continued and reached the minimum size, she was already a tohor woman. However, through the questions that Rabbi Shmuel asked her, it turns out that she had deposited saliva on the undersized garment, undersized fabric, and that came from her when she was still tamea, and that saliva might have remained damp and hence capable of imposing tumah even after the woman herself became tohor and after the garment had reached the size at which it could become tamei. Omar Rabbi Shmuel, kama gdolim divrei chachomim she'omrim belibo l'shomro tohor ein belibo l'shomro tamei. Thorough are the words of the chachomim. How incisive are the words of the Chachamim in their recognition that only if a person is fully concentrating on the item can we say it maintains its purity, and if he doesn't have intention, so it does not maintain its purity. Let us point out a detail in the Rashi, second line from the bottom, We have a little star. Maybe it'll help you find it quickly in the Rashi. Katani Mias, it says in this source, Belibo Lishomron Tohar, that if one is concentrating on it, the item remains Tohar. Klomar, Acher Kavona Sashmira Hein Hein Advarim. The status of the item in question is based on your intent and your concentration. With this source in mind, we now turn our attention to the opinions above that we had featured in triangles. Bishlamo Rebbe Lozer Bar Tzadok. Rebbe Lozer Bar Tzadok described two women whose clothing got switched around. So his ruling that, in quoting Rabbi Akiva, that the clothing are declared as Tomei, Kol Achas Ve'Achas Oimeres, each woman figured, Chaveirosi Eishes Amoretz, the other woman is the wife of an Amoretz, Umoscha Daito Mino, she figured that it's a lost cause, that her clothing that I'm now wearing, they were clothing that would not have been tore in the first place, and therefore she lowers her guard and doesn't even think of watching them in a state of tahara. So hence, Rabbi Akiva says the tumah guarding was dropped, and therefore the clothing are viewed as tumah. And of course, the women wearing them will therefore become tumahs. The Rebbe Yonason ben Amram Nami, as far as his case is concerned, where the fellow thought that he was taking Big Day Chol and it turned out to be Big Day Shabbos, so that when he put them on, he thought he was putting on weekday clothing that, from his standpoint, are guarded with less diligence than had he thought they were Shabbos clothing. It turned out to be Shabbos clothing. So I understand his ruling that they are Tomei. Kevon, the Kalim, the Shabbos, Ovelu, Shimur, Tvei. Since with regard to Shabbos clothing, people guard them more diligently. And he was thinking that they were weekday clothing. Mosach Daite Minayu. He had removed his concentration from them, the actual Shabbos clothing, because he was thinking that they were weekday clothing. So I understand the ruling of there being Tomei. Again, because of lack of Shmira. Elul Rav Yonus and Ben Elazar. According to his approach, Nevid Luhu Shimur Biyodei Dechavrei. Why couldn't the owner of the garment that fell off of him, why couldn't he have guarded it while it was in the hands of the fellow picking it up? Why does Rav Yonason ben Elazar declare the article of clothing to be Tomei? Omar Rav Yochanan, Chazoka ein odem mishamer ma shebiyad chavero. There is a given that people do not guard, they're not diligent with supervising items when they are in someone else's hands. As you can see, a new geometric form appears, and on the side we have a nosei, a topic heading. We indicate this is a hemshech. It's simply a continuation of that, our discussion right now. Tshuvas Rav Yochanan. We saw Rav Yochanan's response that chazoka ein odem mishamir masha biyad chavero. A person doesn't guard that which is in someone else's possession. Someone else is physically holding it. The geometric form that we see here indicates to us a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth nature of the Gemara. With the points facing up, it represents kushios, questions. With the shape inverted, this they the what appears as our house shape inverted, that represents answers, responses. So the Gemara asks, "Velo, is that so that a person is not mishamir masha biyad chaver? A person doesn't watch that which is in his friend's possession? V'ha tanya, we have a Tanaic source which would seem to indicate otherwise. Hare shohoyu chamorav. We're at the top line of Omid Beis. Hare shohoyu chamorav upoyalav teunim taharos. Chamorav are donkey drivers. They are." Ame Haaretz, Rashi says, they're people that they, in and of themselves, they're not diligent with regard to matters of power of purity. So he has these Chamorav of workers along with the donkey drivers Teunin Taharos. They're carrying food stuffs that are Tohar. Rashi adds Teunin Taharos Kigon Yayin Bechovios Shocheres, wine in earthenware containers. Vehein eino noigin besocham. The workers are not touching the interior of the containers. Klicheres eino mitame megabo. And earthenware or clay vessels do not absorb tuma from their exterior. So as far as we're concerned, these workers who themselves are not Torah people, but they're carrying clay vessels, their contact with them is from the outside. Afalp shehiflig mehen yoser mimil, even if the workers, hiflig means distance themselves from the owner more than a meal. Meal is a distance, approximately a kilometer away. Taharoisov tahoros. The wine, in this case, remains tahor. We're not concerned that they may have touched the interior of the barrels of these vessels. After all, the owner didn't tell them that they were going to become distant. So they thought that the owner is around the corner every time, that he's going to come and catch us if we start dabbling with the wine. So we see from here that though the wine is in someone else's possession, it's considered under the guard of the owner. So, in using the terminology we had before, a person is mishamer ma shebiyad chavero. V'im omar, and that's, of course, that's a problem for Rabbi Yochanan. V'im omar lahem, if the owner said to them, l'chu v'ani ovo acharechem, go ahead, I'll come later, I'll follow you. So here he is telling them, go at a distance. This is indifferent. This is in contrast to the first part of this source, where they didn't know that he was at a distance. The source told us that a distance formed between them, but they didn't know that. Here he tells them, go ahead, and I'll come after you. Kevon shinis almu einov mehen. When his vision from them is blocked, literally his eyes are hidden from them. Taroisov Tomeos. The wine, the taros, will be declared as Tomei. So now, as far as we are concerned, in the Reisha of this source, we see a challenge to Rabbi Yochanan. We see that a person is Mishamer Ma Shebiyad Chavero. According to Rashi's Girsa, the rest of this line we skip. We continue with Omer Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha. Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha answers, why is in the Reisha Taros of Taharos? Basically, like Rabbi Yochanan said, a person is not Mishamir Mashe Biat Chavero. So why in the Reisha are the Taros of Taharos? So Rabbi Yitzchok Nafcha explains, Reisha b'metahir chamorav upoalav lekach. He, the owner of the wine, he had seen to it that the workers became tohor. He saw to it that they immersed themselves in a mikveh, that they became tohor. The Gemara asks, "Ihachi seifa nami?" So, if that's the case, why in the seifa do we say that they taros or tameos? The Gemara answers, "Ein am haoretz makpid al mago chavero." The Amorites that was carrying it, though they were tohor, but they are not concerned with the maintenance of the taro to the extent that they wouldn't stop some other Amor, some outsider, from touching the wine. Well, ihachi reisho nami, if that be the case, so in the reisho also, should we not say that the workers there, though they may be tohor, are not going to stop some friend of theirs from touching the wine and being metamit? Why does the reisho say it's tohor? The Gemara answers, bebo lohem derech hakalson. In the reisho, they are afraid that he might come about very quickly. Derech hakalson literally means in a crooked path, but it means he might show up at any time without their foreknowledge. Therefore, they're afraid. They're afraid to let anyone tamper with it. So then why not apply that same reasoning in the Seifa, and through the fear factor enable the wine to be maintained as tohor? The Gemara answers, Kevon di Omar Lahu, since he stated explicitly, Lahu vani ovo acharechem, go ahead, I'll come after you. Mismach samcha datai, they had a feeling of comfort, the fear factor fell away, and therefore they wouldn't stop an outsider from touching the wine. So at this point, of course, you can see we've now ended the second perek of Chagiga, but structurally we had Rav Yochanan's answer to justify the position taken by Rabbi Yonason ben Elazar, Rabbi Yochanan's answer of Chazokin Oda Mishamer Mashi Biat Chavero, and that answer stands and withstood all of the questioning that we just saw. At this point, then, B'siyata Dishmaya, we begin the third and final perek of Masechs Chagiga. Truth be told, this perek is in effect a continuation of the general theme that we already started, and we indicated that during our shiur, during our previous shiur, that we were beginning a topic that essentially would last till the end of the Masichta. We made that point at the Mishnah at the top of Yud Ches Omid Beis. On the side, we have a topic heading. You'll notice that the Mishnah basically will constitute the balance of today's shiur. The topic heading is Rishimo, a list, Shel Chumros B'Kodesh She'ein B'Truma, list of stringencies that we apply to the realm of Kodesh, matters that relate to sacrifices, sacrificial meat, that we do not apply to Truma, the tithe given to Kohanim, that even though it must be maintained in the state of Tara, it nevertheless doesn't have the stringencies that we'll see listed over here. We have a note, by the way, that there's a Mishnah Daf Chof Dalet at Beis, whereas this Mishnah opens up with the expression Chomer B'Kodesh MiBetruma. There's a contrasting Mishnah on Chof Dalem Beis, which starts with Chomer B'Truma. There are chumras that Truma has that you don't find by Kodesh. So now, let us begin the Mishnah. Chomer B'Kodesh MiBetruma. Stringencies that you find by the realm of Kodesh, sacrifices that you don't find in the realm of Truma. 1. Shematpilin kelim besoch kelim. If you have two vessels that are tomei, you can take the smaller vessel and put it in the larger vessel and immerse them together in a mikveh, litruma, avoloi l'kodesh. You can do that if you're interested in in preparing the vessels and purifying the vessels for truma use, but we won't allow you to metahir, to purify the vessels for kodesh, for sacrificial use. Number two, achorayim v'toch ubeis hatzvita betruma avolo b'kodesh. These are descriptions of a vessel. We have a very crude diagram of this on the side of the Gemara. My apologies ahead for our lack of Da Vinci proficiency in creating these this artwork. Nevertheless, you see a vessel, and there is attached to the vessel, or part of the main vessel, are other container sections. They all are part of one vessel. And that's what these terms refer to, achorayim, the outside, and v'toch, the interior, and the beis hatzvita, it's another indentation in the vessel. If one of these parts comes into contact with tumah, the other parts do not become tomei. So that the vessel with all its attachments is viewed in its component parts. This is something that will apply to Truma, but not so with regard to Kodesh. Rather, in the case of Kodesh, if one part of the vessel came into contact with Tuma, the rest of the vessel will be viewed as Tomei. And we have to emphasize again a theme that we've been mentioning many times. We're dealing with rabbinic forms of tumah. This ability to break down a vessel, even though it's constructed as one vessel, to break it down into its component parts, is something we can do only if we're talking about a rabbinic form of tumah that came into contact with one part. We can say that the rest, in the case of truma, remains tar. Not so if one part, let us say, came into contact with a dead sheretz, the whole vessel would become tomei, obviously. Let's continue then. After seeing the second aspect of stringency that we apply to Kodesh, i.e. not viewing them as separate entities, but if Tuma touches one, the whole thing becomes Tame. That is true with regard to Kodesh, but we wouldn't apply that stringency with regard to preparing the vessel, metiring the vessel for Truma purposes. Or, in this case, for the Tuma that descends upon the vessel for Truma purposes, only that part that came into the Tuma would be Tame. The rest would be still Tohar, and you could use it with the Truma. Number three, hanose es hamedris. Someone who's carrying something that's classified as medris. In this case, we'll talk about the shoe of a zav. We explained at great length in the last few shurim the concept of medris, so I don't want to repeat it now, so as not to bore those that have already been listening to these shurim. But nevertheless, if one is carrying the medris, for example, the shoe of a zav, nose es hatruma, avolo es hakodesh. Now, here we have to be very careful because the medrash essentially is something that is metama a person. How in the world can we allow someone who is carrying medrash to also carry truma? So Rashi explains so importantly. He says we're talking about truma that's in a clay receptacle, and the person carrying it is not touching the interior of the receptacle. And as we said earlier, a clay vessel does not absorb tuma from its exterior. So we have someone, though he himself is tuma because he's carrying a medras, he's carrying the shoe of a zav, nevertheless he does not affect negatively the truma, which is contained right now in a clay vessel. Avol lo es hakodesh. However, we're not going to allow this person to carry around kodesh under similar circumstances. 4. Big day ochle truma medras l'kodesh. The clothing of people that eat truma, though for them the clothing are considered tar, it would be considered a medras for someone that wants to eat a sacrifice. So that if someone wanted to eat a sacrifice and he had come into contact with the clothing of truma consumers, truma eaters, he would become tomei. Loi kemidas hakodesh midas hatruma. There's a Tosfos toward the bottom of the page. Lo kemidas hatruma midas hakodesh. Here, our text has the as an opposite reading, but it's essentially the same thing. It's we're saying that the characteristics of one are not like the characteristics of the other. So Tosfos says lefisha meforish bo harbe dinim beinayim nokar hay lishna. This, according to Tosfos, is an introductory phrase introducing the next several items, where we see a difference between kodesh and truma. So we continue. She b'kodesh, when it comes to purifying an article of clothing for kodesh purposes, many articles of clothing have parts of them that are tied together. Before you speak about buttoning an article of clothing, you might have a belt or some part of the fabric that's woven into the garment that enables you to tie it closed. So when you want to prepare a garment for immersing in a mikveh, so it says, again, we're preparing the garment for someone that wants to eat sacrifices. Matir, you have to untie any knots that are in the garment. And then, and menagev, and to make sure it's dry, umatbil, and then immerse it. The Rashi points out that the reason for drying it is that if he doesn't dry it, we raise a problem known as chatzitza, of an interposition. So we want to make sure there is no interposition. As far as that topic is concerned in detail, does wetness really constitute an interposition? That's something that deserves attention on another occasion. But for right now, we see that for Kodesh, we're taking evasive measures. We're untying any knots in it, we're drying it off, and only then umatbil, and then he immerses it, making sure that since all the knots are undone, so the water will be able to touch every square inch of the fabric. There's no part that's left in a knot form where there would otherwise be fear that the water wouldn't get into that part. So the knots are undone, and then it's immersed, v'achakach kosher, and then you tie back that which needs to be tied. Ubetruma, when it comes to immersing a garment for truma eating purposes, kosher, that means if he wants to tie it and leave it tied, he can do so, v'achakach mapil, and then immerse it. Kelim hanigmorim betara tzrichim tvila l'kodesh avalo l'truma. Vessels that were made with care that no tuma should come into contact with them, so they were made with this guarding, they nevertheless require immersion in a mikveh for eating sacrifices. So you made the vessel without any known source of tumah touching it, and yet when you come to use the vessel for korbanos, you have to immerse it first in a mikveh. Aval lo l'trumah. This standard does not apply for a vessel that was under guard in its manufacture, and you intend to use it for truma. You don't have to immerse it once the vessel is completed before you can use it for truma. Number 7. Hakli mitzaref mashe besoichoy lekodesh avolo letruma. If you have a vessel, a bowl, let's say, that has in it a number of different pieces of food. In this case, we'll talk about any food, a number of pieces in this bowl. The pieces are not touching each other. However, if a person touches one of the pieces, person that's tomei touches one of the pieces, they will all be considered tomei, so that all the pieces are viewed as one by virtue of the fact that they're all in the same vessel. That tuma is going to, the contact with one, thereby affecting all of the other pieces, has relevance only with regard to kachim, with regard to matters of korbanos. Avolo l'truma. Therefore, let us say if a person touched one of the pieces, so if you're going to eat truma, so you cannot then eat truma. Or Rashi gives another example. Let's take a look together at the Rashi's example. Avolo l'truma ela oisa shenoga bo, the piece, the very piece that the person touched, havia rishon, that will become a first level tuma. Vanogas bo, any piece that touches that one, havia shnia, will be a second level tuma. Vanogas bishnia shlishis, and that which touches the third piece will reach a third level of tuma. Vashar tahoros, the rest of the pieces are tahor. Number 8. Horvi b'kodesh posel vashlishi b'truma. With regard to descending levels of tuma, more levels exist with kodesh than with truma. So that if you have, let us say, an av hatuma, a primary level of tuma that comes into contact with a piece of food, that food becomes a rishon. When that food touches another piece of food, that second piece of food becomes a sheni. A sheni level, a second level of tuma, will be able to affect truma as well as kochim. In the case of truma, the truma becomes a third level tuma, but it cannot pass any tuma down to something else. It stops there. However, with regard to korbanos, an item that became a third level tuma can affect another piece of food, if it's a korban, to become a fourth level tuma. So that's a stringency. There are more levels of tuma that can be reached in the case of kachim than in the case of truma. Number 9. Ubetruma im nitmeis achas miyodov. In the case of truma, if one of a person's hands became tomei, chaverto tahora, the other hand remains tahor. Ubekodesh, in the case of one preparing himself to eat sacrifices, if one hand became tomei, matbil shtehen, he has to immerse both hands. Shayad mitame es chaverto bekodesh avolo betruma. The ability of one hand to result in the second hand becoming tomei, the one hand that had contact with the tuma, and that resulting in the second hand becoming tomei, that's a phenomenon that exists by kodshim, but not by truma. Number 10. Oichlin, oichlim neguvim biyodayim mesuavos betruma, avolo bekodesh. The first word, ochlin, is a verb that you can eat. Ochlim, a noun, is food that is neguvin. Neguvin means it's dry. That means it was never mukshir lekabel tuma. It never had contact with desired water. One can eat truma with tomei hands. Yodai musuavas. Word musuavas is a word meaning tuma. These are hands that are called sheni level tuma. Stam yodayim shnius l'tumahein. Since the fruits in question, had never come into contact with water, so the food item, the truma, never itself became tame. So even though the person's hands are tame, it's not going to affect the truma food that he's eating, because the food was never mukshir lekabel tuma, never became susceptible to tuma absorption. So we have this called leniency, that we allow a person to have unwashed hands, which have the status of a sheni lituma, to with which to eat truma. Avolo b'kodesh, we won't allow a person to eat kodesh under those same circumstances, with unwashed hands. We continue at the top of Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. Ha'oinein u'mechusu kipurim tzrichin tevila l'kodesh. An onein is a person that had lost a close relative, and that person has not yet been buried. This individual, the onein here himself, is not, he didn't become tame. He didn't. He wasn't in the same room as the deceased itself, but nevertheless, he's an onein simply because his close relative has not been buried yet. So, in that state called aninus, mechusu kipurim is a person that had experienced tuma. He finished his purification days, which is generally speaking a 7-day period, following which on the 8th day he has to bring sacrifices. There are different kinds of tuma that the need to bring sacrifices is the result. On that 8th day, after having observed 7 clean or purification days, on that 8th day, he brings sacrifices, but the hours preceding the bringing of the sacrifices, he's called Mechusar Kippurim. The word Kippurim is a reference to sacrifices. Mechusar means he's lacking, he hasn't yet brought the sacrifices. So these people, Tzrichin Tevila L'Kodesh Avolo L'Truma. Let us take a look at the Rashi on the top line. If I'm a chusuk kippurim kagon zav, zav is a form of tuma that has to observe 7-day purification days. Shetoval leyoim shvi lesviros of erev shimsho, he immersed himself in the mikveh as is required on day 7, and then the sun set, so day 7 ends. Ulemochros hu kore mechusuk kippurim, the next day, day 8, he's called by this term mechusuk kippurim shadayin gemar tarosu tluya bekarbono, because as to complete his purification process, it is dependent on the bringing of the sacrifices. Tzrichin tevila li'achar shehevi korbono, after he brings his sacrifice, imrotzo lechol kodesh, if he wants to eat sacrifices, he cannot go and eat them immediately. He has to first immerse himself in the mikveh. Again, we're talking about someone that already went through all the procedures necessary, the procedures and rituals that are necessary for achieving purification. He went to the mikveh on day 7. But nevertheless, in order to now, after bringing the sacrifices, eat sacrificial meat, he has to go to the mikveh. That requirement applies to Kodesh Avolo L'Truma. If he wants to eat Truma, he doesn't have to go to the mikveh again to enable him to eat truma. The Gemara, which we will not continue with right now, but the Gemara will focus on the issue of immersing two tame vessels, one within the other, that we said we allow for truma purposes, what we will not allow that for kochim purposes. But before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.